So the federal law of 1899 required that any state that wishes to count votes by machine should duly authorize by state law, which means that states such as New Jersey and many others that adopted voting machines in the early part of the 20th century had to adopt legislation describing what kind of machines were permissible, what features they should have, and how they should be evaluated. And different states across the country adopted permutations of the same set of features in different order. So I select here pieces of New Jersey and Kansas and so on. And then when optical scan voting was introduced in the United States in mostly the 70s, one county in New Jersey started to use optical scans. So New Jersey amended its statute to specifically describe what kind of optical scan machines were permitted. As direct recording electronic voting machines entered New Jersey, one county at a time over the past 20 years, New Jersey never amended its statutes to permit them, and therefore these machines were not really permitted for use by statutes, even though one county after another was introducing them. Well, by 2004, when most of the counties had already introduced these machines, computer scientists had figured out, thanks to people like Rebecca Mercury and David Dill, that this could be a problem because they're just computers and they will do whatever you program them to do. And the definition of a von Neumann machine is one that you don't know which program is loaded in it today. And you can ask the computer to tell you what program's in there and it'll tell you whatever it wants to tell you. So there's a real question whether you can trust elections conducted with paperless DRE machines. And even by 2004, the law professors had figured out that the computer scientists are saying these things about these computerized voting machines. So Professor Penny Venetis of the Rutgers Law School, who teaches clinical law, that means she teaches law students how to actually go out and sue people by doing it, picks her cases based on the public interest. And she asked me in October, and September, August 2004, something like that, whether I would testify as an expert witness about DRE voting machines in the lawsuit that she was going to file against the state of New Jersey, and just advise her about what claims to make about these computers. So I agreed to do it. And remember where we were in 2004. The computer scientists understood all these facts about DRE voting machines, but we had never been able to get our hands on one to demonstrate anything about them in practice. The Diebold source code had leaked by then, but not the actual machines. So when I wanted to write an expert report for this filing in October, what did I have to go on? I had voted on it once. It had only just been introduced into my county, and I knew that after you sign the poll book, they give you a ticket, and you take the ticket to the poll worker and hand it to the poll worker, and then the poll worker presses a button on the side of the machine, and you go in there and press buttons, and little X's light up. And when you're done, you press the cast vote button on the lower right of the big screen. So I knew that much about the machine. I had taken my class on a field trip to the superintendent of elections office, and we got to look inside the back where I saw basically this, that there's a cabinet with a metal box inside. Presumably inside that metal box is a computer. Then I was able to get this document because a graduate student at Berkeley named Joseph Lorenzo Hall was acting as a clearinghouse for documents about voting machines, and this was incredibly helpful, the beginnings of this community that will serve as a source of information. So this is a promotional document by Sequoia called the AVC Advantage Security Overview, and in there they describe a little bit about the architecture of the AVC Advantage voting machine. They say it's got a Z80 in there, and it's got ROM chips, and it's got RAM chips, and that was very helpful because I know what a Z80 is. I used to program Z80s back in the late 70s with another guy named Doug Jones, and we built devices and put embedded Z80 processors in them, and I know how Z80 processors work. So here's a circuit board from 1979, which is not so much earlier than the AVC Advantage. It's got the CPU. It's got ROM chips. The ROM chips are in sockets so that you can upgrade the firmware. This is how embedded devices work, especially in the period between 1980 and 1990 when this machine was designed. So I knew that much. And so I wrote an expert report to the court in New Jersey explaining what are the problems with counting votes by computer without a paper trail, and the fact that inside that cabinet there's got to be a computer with ROM chips that you can pull out and replace with new firmware. So I just explained this as a matter of basic computer science without ever having had my hands on the inside of a Sequoia ABC Advantage voting machine because, you know, as computer scientists, we know how these things work. And the premise of the lawsuit is that the DREs are illegal in New Jersey because the statutes were never amended to permit them, and they're unconstitutional because the Constitution of the state of New Jersey grants the substantive right to vote and implicitly the substantive right to have your vote counted reasonably accurately. And it was dismissed pretty quickly by the courts. Partly on factual grounds, but you can't really dismiss a lawsuit based on factual grounds. You have to dismiss it on maybe jurisdictional grounds. So the dismissal was appealed. And while the dismissal was on appeal, the New Jersey State Legislature passed a bill requiring a voter-verified paper record system, basically a VVPAT, to be implemented and installed by January 1st, 2008 in the state of New Jersey. And so that was great. But the appeals court, which then was about to hear the dismissal of the lawsuit, still became very concerned about how effective the executive branch was going to be in implementing the state law, the law the legislature passed and the governor signed. And so the appeals court basically undismissed the case and instructed the lower court to monitor the state's progress in complying with this 2008 deadline. In the meantime, I was able to buy some voting machines on the internet from govdeals.com, which is sort of like eBay. So I bought a lot of 5 ABC Advantage voting machines from North Carolina, which was moving to OpScan. And they were $16.80 a piece, plus about $900 shipping for the 5 of them. And here I am in my office with my newly purchased used ABC Advantage voting machine. Of course, the first thing I did is I open up that metal box in the back, and there they are, ROMs in sockets, just as I wrote to the judge a year earlier or 2 years earlier. So I wrote another letter to the judge, another certification in this ongoing court case where the judge is monitoring progress, saying, look, it's just like I predicted. There's ROMs in there, and they're in sockets, and here's how easy it is to unscrew 10 screws and replace the ROM chips. And a couple of graduate students at Princeton University took apart one of the machines and reverse engineered the hardware. Both of them are in this room at the moment. Started reverse engineering the software using the IDA Pro reverse engineering tool. And by this, we were able to estimate how much time it would take an attacker who just had access to some ROM chips for a minute or two to copy them to could then reverse engineer the whole thing enough to make the machine cheat. It'd be a few person months, maybe 4 or 5. Well, the state did not implement a voter-verified paper ballot by January 1st, 2008. And even though the legislature extended the deadline, the judge still went ahead and ordered a full trial on the constitutional issue of can the legislature keep extending the deadline and permitting the use of paperless DREs, because our paperless DREs sufficiently untrustworthy, they cannot be used. And while that was going on, several machines in New Jersey exhibited an anomaly. There were more votes than voters in the Republican presidential primary in some counties, and more votes than voters in the Democratic presidential primary on some machines in some counties. And this can only be explained by a software bug. So at that time, Penny called me up and said, hey, we're going to subpoena the voting machines and the source code, and you can examine it and find all the bugs. And I said, oh, no. Because, you know, that means... So I asked Ed for help in drafting the subpoena. And again, it's really useful to have a community of people to whom you can turn who have experience with things. And Ed helped draft a really good subpoena that asked for all the things we would need in an actual real examination of the source code. So then the judge said, well, you know, Professor Pelkin, go into the warehouse and look at the machines for a couple hours. And we had to explain, no, we need a team of computer scientists. This examination is not something that one person can do. If a team of people I'll be able to collect together people that have overlapping but different kinds of expertise. And so the fact that I was able to get 5 other good computer scientists to help me with the 30-day examination of the source code and hardware and do experiments on the machine and do analyses was extremely helpful and really made this possible. So these are my co-authors. And at the part of the, there was litigation over the terms of the protective order. The protective order is meant to protect Sequoia from me releasing their source code into the wild, but they also wanted it to protect me saying anything at all about their machines ever. So the fact that I'm even allowed to be here talking to you about the results we found is a result of the fact that we insisted in our litigation that the protective order should not gag the technical results of the study. And we were able to publish the technical results of our study in the fall of 2008. And we found several technical things that I will tell you some of them now. First of all, that you can reverse engineer the ABC Advantage back to an analyzable source code in maybe 25 person weeks with a commercial off-the-shelf reverse engineering tools. Then we wrote some firmware to cheat. We added this firmware to the existing firmware. That is, we burned a new ROM that had all of the existing firmware, and in a place where there was empty space in the existing firmware, we added another 600 bytes of cheating firmware that after the 20th vote is cast, it will go back through the vote totals and the audit logs and change a bunch of votes from one candidate to another. Now, of course, we knew back in 2004, or Rebecca Mercury knew back in 1996, that you could do this. It's obvious as a matter of computer science, but to do it for real in a video that you can demonstrate for the judge makes a big difference in a lawsuit. So, and then I had to get Alex Halderman to teach me how to pick a lock. So I was able to pick the lock on the video in about 10 seconds, and then you unscrew 10 screws and take off the circuit board cover, pry out the ROM, put in another one, screw all the screws back in, pick the lock again to close the door, and we made a video of that for the judge, followed by running a simulated election, and we demonstrated the obvious fact that you can make a program that doesn't cheat in pre-lat mode. But, you know, it seems obvious, but in the first reply briefs in 2004, the election officials would say, well, of course this machine couldn't cheat because we do these pre-lat tests. And you, of course, don't cheat until at least a whole bunch of votes are cast so that a casual test won't catch that. And you modify all the different audit trails consistently with the votes because they're just electronic records and all these electronic records can be modified. And you modify the in-the-cartridge results consistently with the internal memory results. And then in the report we wrote of all the other things that the attacker would do to prevent the detection, but we didn't implement all of them in our 600-byte test program. Well, so that was, you can change the firmware in it and make it cheat. That was the main technical result. Here I am presenting to this august body this fact. The results cartridge, this is how votes are communicated from the voting machine to the tabulation software. And it's just static RAM memory with batteries because it was invented before flash memory and it doesn't have any interesting checksums and certainly doesn't have any digital signatures. And we could make a little device like this. This is a mock-up of a device. In the very next talk in this session, the authors actually built a device, not in a cigarette packet, but in something not a lot bigger, that will read and write these results cartridges. And you could plug this kind of thing into your results cartridge and in 5 seconds it would change votes according to some predetermined algorithm. So the votes are very vulnerable. Even if the inside of the machine has not been hacked, you could hack the results cartridge. Now, this machine originally was just the motherboard plus the voter panel, and in around 2000 they added audio capability for blind voters. And they did this by adding a daughter board, which has a 486, basically a DOS computer with flash memory, connected to the audio kit. And the daughter board communicates to the motherboard through an RS-232 serial connection. Now, you would think, gee, flash memory, could it possibly be susceptible to exactly the same virus attacks through the firmware upgrade mechanism that every other voting machine with flash memory and PCMCIA cartridges was susceptible to? And the answer is, of course, yes. That just the standard boot up sequence of the daughter board looks to see if there's a certain thing on the cartridge that it should install to replace all of the firmware in the flash memory of the daughter board. Well, okay, it's like every other voting machine. And now the next question is, can the daughter board steal the votes of blind voters? Well, yes, of course. And the next is, can the daughter board corrupt the motherboard to steal the votes of other voters? So let's see. So here we are. That would be possible if, for example, there were a buffer overrun vulnerability in the part of the code of the motherboard that reads messages from the daughter board. And so we looked and looked and looked. We found the comment that says, do this to protect against buffer overruns. And then eventually we found the buffer overrun vulnerability, which is not a code injection vulnerability. And we were not even able to quite do a return to libc vulnerability, but we were able to return to address zero, which reboots the machine. And that means that the daughter board can do targeted denial of service. Since the daughter board knows which precinct it's in, that's part of the audio ballot definition, you can have machines fail to turn on in the precinct of your choice on one election sometime, once. And that's a vulnerability. Aside from security vulnerabilities, we found what I think is a significant user interface inaccuracy. Of course, overvotes are not possible on this machine. It's a DRE. The machine, like many DREs, has very weak protection against undervotes. It has significantly weaker protection against undervotes than touchscreen machines do because there's no review screen. There's just a big voter panel with buttons and lights. But in addition, there's just a user interface design bug. When the machine has not been activated by the poll worker to accept a vote, and remember, you hand the poll worker a ticket, the poll worker presses a button on the side of the machine that activates the machine to accept your votes, and then you cast your votes with the buttons and press the cast vote button at the lower right of the screen to record all your votes. When the poll worker has not activated the ballot, you would think that if you press a button on the big panel, no green X would light up right next to it, but that is not true. And you would think that when you press the cast vote button on the lower right, it wouldn't light up bright red, but that is not true. And you would think that the LCD display down at the bottom in the right-hand panel would not say vote recorded, thank you, but that's not true either. Because some brilliant engineer at Sequoia designing this machine 25 years ago said, well, in between voters, you should be able to test to make sure each button in light works. And the way we'll let you do that is you press the button and the little X will light up next to it. And that when you press the cast vote button, it'll light up, and then you can test that each button works. And data that we have from one precinct where we actually examined the voter authorization tickets and compared the number of them to the number of votes indicates that this could be a source of error on the order of 1% of undervotes, which is quite significant. When we examined the machines, there were no tamper evident seals on the machine, almost. There was one little seal that held the cartridge in place. And so it was easy to get at the ROM to replace it. And in our report to the court, we wrote that adding temporary evidence seals wouldn't help because they're easy to defeat, according to the peer-reviewed scientific literature. When the judge read our report in September, this is before the trial, where she's not going to make findings of fact based on our report without testimony and without refutation, but she still was very concerned, and she asked the state in a conference, what are you doing to secure the voting machines for the November elections? And the state said, well, we're going to put seals on it to protect against access to the ROM, and here's a picture of the seals they put on. And indeed, they used those seals in the November election for the very first time. So we went to the author of the report in the scientific literature about the ineffectiveness of seals, and he agreed to testify in the case about seal protocols. But in the meantime, before he testified, and before he told me how to defeat these seals, I said, don't tell me how to defeat these seals. Let me see if I, as a complete amateur at seals, can defeat all of the seals that the state put on their voting machine. And here are the seals that the state did put on their voting machine in October. And I defeated them all. I went down in my basement with a heat gun and a razor blade and a screwdriver. And I managed to take all the seals off and put them back on without evidence of tampering. And I wrote another report to the court and a video. So you can try it yourself. Just get some seals from, you know, free samples from the manufacturer, you know, Google on the web and try and figure out how to defeat them. So in December, the state said, well, we'll put on new seals. We'll throw away those seals and we'll put on these seals that are really impossible to defeat. And they look like this, except the one that I can't show you because there's a special protective order about that third one. So I defeated those. I went into my basement. I made those tools on the left, which cost a total of $15, and the tool on the center bottom cost a total of $1 of scrap parts I had. And I was able to remove all the seals and put them back. So then the trial started January 2009, and the first witness who was actually one of the plaintiffs, I'm not a plaintiff, I'm just an expert testifying on behalf of the plaintiffs, explained that when she voted on this machine, the poll worker wasn't sure whether her vote counted and asked her to go in again and try it again, and this happened two or three times, and she can't tell how many times she voted. And my remark is that this is entirely consistent with the behavior of the machine when it's not activated, that you can't, if you're not an expert in the use of this machine and you press a button and a light goes on, you might think your vote is counting. And I was a second witness. I testified for about 3 days, and I testified about some of the stuff I've talked about here, pathways to installing fraudulent firmware on the ABC Advantage and what the consequences of fraudulent firmware would be and how hard it would be to detect, all the things that, as a computer scientist, you would know. And I showed that the physical seals can be defeated. Putting more seals is not going to be. So for each different kind of seal, I showed on a little block of wood, you could attach it, and here's the tools you would use to remove it, and here's how you could put it back, and here's what it looks like. So during the trial, there are all sorts of pieces of physical evidence that I used to explain to the judge what's inside the machine and how it works and what the purpose is. Upper right is the WinEDS computer that's used for ballot programming and tabulation. On the lower right's a nice soldering iron that you could use to remove the processor chip in case you didn't want to cheat using the ROMs. You could just put in a fraudulent processor that, when it chooses to, will ignore what's in the ROMs and add up whatever it wants to add up. And in the lower left are lock-picking tools that I used and then entered into evidence. So, lots of stuff. So that was 3 days of direct examination, and then cross-examination. The second question was, Professor Pell, would you demonstrate for the court how to defeat the seals and replace the ROM on this actual ABC Advantage voting machine that we have right here in the courtroom? To which the plaintiffs objected. But the judge said, I think it's a fair question for use on cross-examination. Objection overruled. So I got out my tools, and I took off my suit jacket, and I slowly and carefully removed each seal from the voting machine and unscrewed all the screws and pulled the ROM out, showed it to the judge, put it back, put all the seals back on, and I think there was, you know, maybe one dent, slight little dent on one of the seals. So third witness was Ed Felton, who just testified as a fact witness that indeed these voting machines are left unattended at polling places because they're big and heavy and they get delivered there a week before the election and they get picked up a week after the election. And where is the polling place? It's the elementary school gym where Ed takes his daughter for a Girl Scout meeting, or it's the church basement where, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And the next three witnesses were county voting officials who testified basically that that's true, what Ed said. And then Wayne Wolf of Georgia Tech testified that it's not at all difficult to make a fraudulent Z80 that will ignore what's in the ROMs and add up votes however it wants. And then finally, Roger Johnston testified not just that these seals can be defeated and here's how to do it in open court for the judge, but that seals need an inspection protocol to be effective, and the state doesn't have an inspection protocol, and it'd be really expensive to do it well. The state's case basically boiled down to the seals really should protect the ROM against replacement. They did not really present a witness who would dispute that you could, that if you replace the firmware, the machine could steal votes. So the witness testimony ended in May. The plaintiffs have submitted their proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law. The defendant's brief is due at the end of August, and the court is expected to rule. So the conclusion is that the ABC Advantage has a computer in it. If you change the software, it will miscount votes, and there's no practical way to tell from the outside whether the computer has been tampered with, and therefore this kind of voting machine does not give the substantive right to vote to New Jersey citizens guaranteed to them by their Constitution. Thank you. I guess we have time for questions. And I'll unhook while yes.
Hi, Russ Fink from UMBC. Question on the ROMs. Did anybody ever consider the benefit of perhaps applying some sort of epoxy resin over the ROMs to lock them in place?
Well, that wasn't much discussed in the court case. In practice, if you do that, then you don't know whether you've locked in place fraudulent ROMs or real ROMs. So maybe that's the reason it wasn't suggested by. And also, you lose the ability to do firmware upgrades on the machine. And the state and Sequoia, and the state worked pretty closely with Sequoia on this, didn't seem to be interested in proposing something that would lock out the ability to do firmware upgrades.
So having done that attack, would you find some sort of epoxy resin technique or any other sort of tamper-resistant thing like that to be something hard to defeat, or are you still talking 8 minutes as opposed to seven?
Well, with all those seals on it, it was more like half an hour instead of 7 minutes. So it's not like the seals do nothing in terms of time. The problem with epoxy resin, now you've locked in something that you don't know what's in there and can't test.
That's fair. Thank you.
So, your conclusions had a line about this kind of machine. And in the talk, you went a little bit between the particular Sequoia machine and sort of paperless DRE in general. And I want to just get a sense for how narrowly or broadly you scoped your documents to the court.
Just this particular the document machine. To the court was both about this specific machine, which is the one in use in almost all of New Jersey, and paperless DREs in general. And in the trial, we were careful to explain which conclusions applied to this specific machine and which conclusions applied in general. At least in this machine, to make it cheat, you actually have to physically replace the ROM in some cases, whereas many other paperless DREs are way worse than that.
So what claims are you making about paperless systems in general?
My personal claim is that barring any kind of end-to-end cryptographic techniques which are not implemented in any state that I know of and were not proposed by the defendants in New Jersey, paperless DREs are not trustworthy for use in elections.
I just want to make sure that caveat that you just added here is in any briefing or court filings that you made. Thanks.
Just a comment. The Shuptronic 1242, also known as the Danaher 1242, which is a direct competitor to this machine of the same vintage, has a cute feature in it that on the back there's a enable voter button or something to that effect, and there's also an enable test voter button. And if you push the wrong one, it behaves in exactly the same way as you described, where it looks to the voter like everything is happening normally. But in fact, their votes aren't recorded. Actually, what I said is incorrect. It's not on a. It's enable election or enable test election. And mm-hmm. if you push the enable test election, then the machine behaves exactly as you would think. But no votes are recorded for the entire precinct. So that's a great way to do a denial of service attack is on a precinct is to make the whole right. votes go away. So it's sort of a generic problem, it seems to me, that they wanted to make this capability, but they didn't think through the implications of it.
One quick comment, Peter Neumann again. When I did the study of the advantage back for New York City back in 93, I think it was, there were an enormous number of system problems. It wasn't just the code, but the overall system had, I listed something like 23 different ways in which the system could be wrong or rigged. Even if the software was all the right software that was evaluated. And the sad thing about all this is that the situation is not much better today, despite all the efforts of you guys and Deborah Bowen's top to bottom review and everything else. So I think the problems here are deeply political, economic, local interest, all kinds of things that lie outside of the firmware and the hardware and the software. And it is, I think, very frustrating to a lot of us who've been doing this for 20, 25 years or so, that even though the evidence is there that the systems are disastrously bad, nothing happens.
I'm not sure I'd say that nothing has happened. I think more than half the states are now using optical scan.
Okay. Thank you.